one more time. You may all be seated. Always have to get the last in note, don't you, Gene? Keeping in mind that's appropriate considering who we're talking about today. We're talking about Gideon. We're going to see this a little later on, but there were some shofars of sound in that day. So might I say you clean up nicely. Having once been filthy rags, you are now fine white linen, ready for a wedding feast. There we go. So I told you, our Summer of Faith tour takes us to Gideon. We're not going in any specific order. Just what God brings to my mind and what he is sort of, how I'm going to put this. There are times when I know what I need to speak about because I can't stop thinking about it all week. So Gideon was on the mind this week. For those of you who haven't been here a while, you may have been online. For those of you online who may not have been here, this is how I've been starting off our Summer of Faith tour. Every tour has a t-shirt. I have a declaration. Maybe it'll go on a t-shirt, I don't know. Our faith is revealed through the framework of culture. We do not truly know what we can endure unless it is tested, the it being our faith. It is tested by the time and the culture we reside in. Faith is not required in a vacuum, absent of trials and tribulations. Faith flourishes when tested. You don't know what the true capacity of your faith is until it is tested to its limits. The Complete Jewish Bible translates Hebrews 11:1 as trusting or faith is being confident of what we hope for, convinced about things we do not see. I emphasize these two words, confident and convinced. Confident is translated in the King James's substance and is defined as a state of feeling certain about the truth of something. You're certain about it. You're certain that if I drop my computer, it will likely break. I am confident of that. I've been down that road before. It's a feeling or belief that one can rely on someone or something. In other words, they're firm in their trust. They're confident about that individual or that thing. I am confident about gravity. Notice what I dropped. Didn't even make a sound. Then convinced. Not the verb to convince someone, but the adjective. It's typically translated as evidence in the King James. And that you are completely certain about something, firm in one's belief with regard to a particular cause or issue. So today we're looking at Gideon. There's much to talk about Gideon. See, he only comprises three chapters in the book of Judges. But there's a lot there. But before we look at Gideon, we have to look at the state of the nation. What's going on in Israel at the time of Gideon? Keeping in mind this is after Joshua. There isn't one unified leader in the nation. But in essence, there's little pockets of leaders in different places. So Judges 6:1. But the people of Israel did what was evil from Adonai's perspective. I think I talked about that last week or the week before, regarding how many times it was referenced in the book of Kings, referring to the kings. Israel did what was evil from Adonai's perspective. So Adonai handed them over to Midian for 7 years. Midian exercised its power harshly against Israel and because of Midian, the people of Israel hid themselves in mountains and caves and in other safe places. So in other words, they were, well, it says they're hiding, But it's like they were fleeing, but they didn't flee from the land. Verse 6, Israel became very discouraged because of Midian, and the people of Israel cried out to Adonai. When the people of Israel cried out to Adonai because of Midian, Adonai sent a prophet to the people of Israel and who said to them, Adonai, the God of Israel, says, I brought you up from Egypt, out of a life of slavery. I delivered you from the power of the Egyptians and from the power of all your oppressors. I drove them out ahead of you and gave you their land. And I said to you, I am Adonai, your God. You are not to be afraid of the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you are living. But you paid no attention to what I said. So this is the condition of the state of the nation of Israel. Just as Adonai heard the cries of his people Egypt, of his people in Egypt, that we read in Exodus 2:23, sometime during those many years, the king of Egypt died, but the people of Israel still groaned under the yoke of slavery, and they cried out, and their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God. God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. God saw the people of Israel, and God acknowledged them. You're going to see a theme play out here, and I don't know if you're going to recognize it, but I will reveal it at the end to you. So he called out Moses through the burning bush. So to Adonai would again identify another unsuspecting individual with whom he would rescue his people, from an oppressive nation. This time the location wasn't an angel of Adonai that caused a bush to burn and not to be consumed, but this time an angel of Adonai would simply sit under a tree waiting for their intended target, God's intended target. Judges 6:11-12. Then the angel of Adonai came and sat under the pistachio tree in Orphah that belonged to Joash, the Abizari, his son Gideon was threshing wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from Midian. The angel of Adonai appeared to him and said to him, you valiant hero, Adonai is with you. Remember I said he was identified as a hero before he even did anything. As opposed to Moses' curiosity investigating the bush, Gideon was rather skeptical to what was said to him. It wasn't as much the hero statement as it was Adonai being with him. For this is how he responds. Excuse me, sir, answered Gideon. But if Adonai is with us, why is all of this happening to us? And where are all his miracles our ancestors told us about when they said, didn't Adonai bring us up from Egypt? For now Adonai has abandoned us and handed us over to Midian. Adonai turned to him and said, go in this strength of yours and save Israel from the hands of Midian. Haven't I sent you? Based on the current state of Israel under the control and oppression of Midian, Gideon questioned if Adonai is with us. Where are the miracles? Why are we oppressed by another nation? You would say he had some doubt. Was this not similar to when Israel was in Egypt? Where is God? Is this your life as a believer? Where is God? Do you ask that question now when you're going through times of trial? Think of this. Ask yourself this. If I am a child of the king, fill in the blank. Why would I be going through this? Whatever it is. If you fill in that statement, then that's the mindset that you embrace. I'm a child of the king who is an overcomer. I'm a child of the king who is blessed. as opposed to, I am a child of the king, why am I going through this? How you answer the rest of that question, how you fill in that blank, reveals your mindset, reveals your perspective of where you are. So Gideon was skeptical because of the current state of the nation. They were being oppressed again. We will find out more about the internal condition of Israel in a moment. But where is God when all of this is happening? Adonai ultimately calls Gideon to save his people, for which Gideon has a Moses moment. But Gideon answered him, "Forgive me, my Lord, but with what am I to save Israel? Why, my family is the poorest of Manasseh, and I'm the youngest person in my father's house." Does this sound familiar at all? "But I'm certain they won't believe me, and they won't listen to what I say." That was Exodus 4:1. That was Moses speaking. How about this? "Oh, Adonai, I'm a terrible speaker. I always have been, and I'm no better now, even after you've spoken to your servant." Moses again, Exodus 4:10. What are we seeing here? Gideon did not see himself as Adonai saw him. He filled in the blank, "Well, who am I?" He was the youngest, like someone else whom Adonai would also choose. "Are all your sons here?" Shmuel asked Jesse. He replied, "There is still the youngest. He's out there tending the sheep." Shmuel said to Jesse, "Send and bring him back, because we won't sit down to eat until he gets here." Doesn't matter where you are on the lineage chart. Oldest, youngest, middle child, doesn't matter to God. By what standard did Adonai use to choose David? 1 Samuel 16:7. Adonai said to Shmuel, "Don't pay attention to how he looks or how tall he is, because I have rejected him. Adonai doesn't see the way humans see. Humans look at the outward appearance, but Adonai looks at the heart. If only we could see ourselves through Adonai's eyes, we would likely see something much different. For he created us not to be uncertain, timid, and fearful, but rather confident and fearless. For we are created in his image and likeness, according to Genesis 1:26. Then God said, 'Let us make humankind in our image, in the likeness of ourselves, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, the animals, over all the earth, and over every crawling creature that crawls on the earth.'" We were created to lead. We were created to govern. Consider this: "For you fashioned my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I thank you because I am awesomely made wonderfully. Your works are wonders. I know this very well. My bones were not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes could see me as an embryo. But in your book, all my days were already written. My days had been shaped before any of them existed." You need to ask yourself, if my days have been formed, am I following God's roadmap, or did I make a wrong turn somewhere? Keeping in mind, what does GPS do when you make a wrong turn? Recalculate. So you're not lost to God. Your path is just being recalculated. Verse 17, "God, how I prize your thoughts, how many of them there are. If I count them, There are more than grains of sand. If I finish the count, I am still with you. So this is how God sees us. This is a perspective that we should be taking for ourselves. And Gideon continues in verse 16 of Judges 6. Adonai said to him, because I will be with you, you will strike down Midian as easily as if they were just one man. Gideon replied, if indeed you favor me, would you mind giving me a sign that it is really you talking with me? Keeping in mind, this is a Jewish thing. We look for signs. It's in our heritage. Moses had a sign of the burning bush not being consumed. So what would Adonai do as a sign for Gideon? Starting in verse 19, Gideon went in, cooked a young goat, and made matzah from a bushel of flour. He put the meat in a basket. And the broth in a pot. Brought them out to him under the pistachio tree and presented them. The angel of God said to him, take the meat and the matzah, lay them on the rock, and pour out the broth. Gideon did so. Then the angel of Adonai reached out with the stick he was holding, touched the meat and the matzah, and fire shot up out of the rock and burned up the meat and the matzah. Then the angel of Adonai disappeared before his eyes. In other words, a burnt offering, so to speak. Gideon realized that he was the angel of Adonai and said, oh no, my Lord. Adonai, because I've seen the angel of Adonai face to face. But Adonai reassured him, shalom to you, don't be afraid, you won't die. Then Gideon built an altar there to Adonai and called it Adonai Shalom. On this day it remains in Orphah. So here you had the calling of Gideon. Sounds a lot similar to that of Moses. There were a lot of parallels between the two. And now we see Gideon's bold action. Upon the call of Adonai, Gideon is instructed to take action. That very night, Adonai said to him, take your father's bull and the other bull, the 7-year-old. Destroy the altar of Baal that belongs to your father. Cut down the sacred pole next to it and build a proper altar to Adonai, your God, on top of this strong point. Then take the second bull and offer it as a burnt offering, using the wood of the sacred pole you cut down. Gideon took 10 of his servants and did what Adonai had told him to do. He didn't do it by day because he was afraid of the men in his father's household and those from the city, so he did it at night. Now, keeping in mind, Gideon's not perfect here. He hasn't been fully tried by fire, so to speak. There is still some doubt and some fear in him, but he still did it. God didn't say when to do it. He told him to do it, and he did. We learn that the altar belonged to Gideon's father. There was a divide within the family, so to speak. His father was not serving Adonai, but rather Baal. It would be his son who would follow Adonai. But keeping in mind, we're going to see something interesting here. The mob was angry that their altar and sacred pole had been destroyed. Yet it was Gideon's father who stood up to them and ultimately spoke. You're defending Baal, are you? It's your job to save him? Anyone who defends Baal will be put to death before morning. If he's a god, let him defend himself. After all, somebody destroyed his altar. This is Joash. This is Gideon's father saying these things to the people, the angry mob. With his action, Gideon had a name change. Something we have seen with Abraham and Yaakov, a distinction made between their previous status and their transformed status through Adonai. Gideon would now be known as Yerubbaal, or Baal, excuse me, which means to let Baal defend. In other words, let the God defend himself. So there's a transformation going on in Gideon. God changes his name. The boldness of Gideon was seen in tearing down the altar of Baal, but going against an entire nation was something entirely different. For faith to function, fear cannot be present. We read in Judges 6:36 that Gideon said to God, "If you are going to save Israel through me, as you said you would, then here I will lay a wool fleece on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece only, while all the ground stays dry, I will be convinced that you will save Israel through me as you said you would." How many people have laid fleeces before? As I mentioned, Gideon's on a path to transformation. He hasn't fully arrived there yet. But keeping in mind, this isn't a bad thing. Because in verse 3, it said, "And it happened. He got up early in the morning, pressed the fleece together, and wrung dew out of it, a bowl full of water. But Gideon said to God, 'Don't be angry with me because I am asking one more thing. Let me make one more test. Please, this time, let it be dry only on the fleece with dew all over the ground.'" And that is what God did that night. It was dry only on the fleece, even though there was dew all over the ground. What are we experiencing here? But likely another Moses moment. Moses asked for a sign by which the people of Israel and ultimately Pharaoh would believe Adonai had sent him. I also believe these were signs from Moses himself. "What is in your hand?" And he answered, "A staff." He said, "Throw it on the ground." And he threw it on the ground. It turned into a snake and Moses recoiled from it. This is one of the signs. Show this to the people. Show this to Pharaoh. Exodus 4:6. "Furthermore, Adonai said to him, 'Now put your hand inside your coat.' He put his hand in his coat, and when he took it out, it was leprous, as white as snow. Then God said, 'Now put your hand back in your coat.' He put his hand back in his coat, and when he took it out, it was as healthy as the rest of his body. If they won't believe you or heed the evidence of this first sign, they will be convinced by the second." So, it's not uncommon that when we pray, we desire confirmation. Moses did. Gideon did as well. Would this be any different than what we are told to do in testing the spirits? 1 John chapter 4. "Dear friends, don't trust every spirit. On the contrary, test the spirits to see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world." I don't remember the Russian for it, but when we were dealing in the Cold War, Ronald Reagan always said, "Trust but verify," in dealing with the Russians. Now, keeping in mind we trust God, but sometimes we need to be reassured ourselves. This is a flaw within our human old nature. It's not a flaw within our new nature. It's not a flaw within the spirit residing in us, but it's a flaw within the spirit that we are, not the spirit of God that resides in us. So Gideon was not able to do as Yochanan had further conveyed as follows. In testing the spirits, here is how you recognize the Spirit of God. Every spirit which acknowledges that Yeshua, the Messiah, came as a human being is from God. And every spirit which does not acknowledge Yeshua is not from God. We have that now. Gideon didn't have that then. He couldn't say, okay, am I trusting in you, and who do you say Yeshua is? Yeshua wasn't even on his radar at that moment in time as we know him today. Gideon received confirmation through very specific instructions. When you pray, how specific are you? How detailed are you? So far as we've seen, that when Gideon was convinced and confident, he went into action. When he sought Adonai for clarity, he was specific. He focused on what Adonai had called him to do, save Israel through him. Is Israel to be saved through me? He was very specific when he was seeking God's response. Then Adonai responded to both requests. So Gideon had further confidence and therefore convinced to proceed. Tearing down an altar is one thing. Going against a nation is something entirely different. So now that, how do I want to put this? Now that the process of getting him to the point of being convinced is done, now that he's teared down the altar of Baal, now it's time to prepare for battle. Prior to the fleece, Gideon would round up men from the other tribes of Israel in verses 34 and 35. But the spirit of Adonai covered Gideon. He sounded the call on the shofar. And Abiezer rallied behind him. He sent messengers throughout all of Manasseh, and they too rallied behind. He also sent messengers to Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali. So in other words, they were gathering an army, so to speak. It wasn't going to be just the tribe of Manasseh. They would come to set up near Midian. When men of Israel from four tribes had come to join Gideon for the ensuing battle, only to hear from Adonai. Chapter 7, verse 2. Adonai says to Gideon, there are too many people with you for me to hand Midian over to them, because I don't want Israel to be able to boast against me. We saved ourselves by our own strength. So you have this call out. People respond. God says, too many. So Gideon is now instructed to winnow down the army that will go against Midian. In verse 3, therefore proclaim to the people, anyone who is anxious or afraid should go back home, while we stay here at Mount Gilead. 22,000. That means there were 32,000 total. Approximately two-thirds were either anxious or afraid. Not as big of an army, but still a significant number to go up against Midian. We're now at 10,000. Adonai speaks to Gideon again. There are still too many people. Have them come down to the water, and there I will screen them for you. If I say of anyone, this one is for you, he will go with you. And if I say, this one is not for you, he won't go with you. Adonai gave Gideon these instructions so he would bring them down to the water, and Adonai would guide him in choosing men to go up against him. Adonai said to Gideon, put on one side everyone who laps up water with his tongue the way a dog does, and put to the other side everyone who gets down on his knees to drink. 300 lapped, putting their hand to their mouth. All the rest of them got down on their knees. Adonai said to Gideon, I will use the 300. So out of 10,000, 9,700 are now gone. If you do the math, that's less than 1% of the 32,000. So that night, Adonai said to him, "Get up and attack the camp because I have handed it over to you." In the eyes of Adonai, the battle had already been decided. He had handed Midian and the other nations over to Gideon. However, Adonai said this to Gideon, "But if you are afraid to attack, go down with your servant Purah. And after you hear what they are saying, you will have the courage to attack the camp." So with his servant Purah, he went down to the outposts of the camp. God gave him grace to choose. It's already decided, go now. Or if you're still not certain, do this. Take your servant, go, spy out what they're saying. Then you'll have confidence. So what did Gideon hear? Starting in verse 12. "Now Midian, Amalek, and all the others from the east had settled in the valley as thick as locusts. Their camels, too, were beyond counting, like the sand on the seashore." God winnowed down a potential army of 32,000 to 300. And here you have camps with camels too numerous to count, likely people that ride the camels and people who don't ride the camels. So, I mean, we're talking a lot of people. Gideon got there just as a man was telling a comrade about a dream he had had. "I just now dreamt that a loaf of barley bread fell into the camp of Midian, came to the tent and struck it so hard that it overturned the tent and knocked it flat." Must have been really stale bread. Anyways. His comrade answered, "This can only be the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. God has given Midian and all his army into his hands." When Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he fell on his knees in worship. Then he returned to the camp of Israel and said, "Get up, because Adonai has handed Midian's army over to you." So upon hearing this, Gideon prepared. He divided the 300 men into three companies. He put in the hands of all of them shofars and emptied pitchers with torches in them. Then he said to them, "Watch me and do what I do. When I get to the edge of the camp, whatever I do, you do the same. When I and everyone with me blow the shofar, then you blow your shofars all around the whole camp and shout for Adonai and for Gideon." A dream and an interpretation. One might call this a Joseph moment. Does this not call to mind a verse in Romans? "So trust comes from what is heard." He heard and he believed. That is Gideon. Keeping in mind the rest of the verse of Romans, "And what is heard comes through a word proclaimed about Messiah." Yet keeping in mind what was proclaimed in the interpretation of the dream. Gideon was identified as the man who would be leading the army of Israel. So he had to hear it from the enemy in order to truly take action. God gave him the grace to find his faith. So we come to the battle. Upon hearing the dream and the interpretation, Gideon and the 100 men with him arrived at the edge of the camp a little before midnight. just before they had changed the guard. They blew the shofars and broke in pieces the pitchers that were in their hands. All three companies blew their shofars, broke the pitchers, and held the torches in their hands, keeping their right hands free for their shofars they were blowing. And they shouted, "The sword of Adonai and for Gideon." Thus they ultimately took the enemy by surprise. Then as every man stood still in place around the camp, the whole camp was thrown into panic, with everyone screaming and trying to escape. Gideon's men blew their 300 shofars, and Adonai caused everyone in the camp to attack his comrades. In other words, they were pointed this way originally, but then through God, they were pointed this way. They were pointed inward. In other words, there was so much chaos that they didn't know who they were fighting. Then the men of Israel were summoned from Naphtali, Asher, and both regions of Manasseh, and they pursued Midian. And then it goes on. Ultimately, Midian was defeated. Gideon did not walk blindly in his faith, but demonstrated everything we are to do today and that which Scripture conveys. He became confident and thus convinced about Adonai's call to save Israel from Midian. He trusted Adonai, but also sought confirmation from him also. And ultimately, he would obey Adonai's word. Now, were you paying attention to a lot of the things that I brought into the sermon? Remember this verse that Gideon spoke? "But if Adonai is with us, then why is all this happening to us? And where are all the miracles our ancestors told us about when they said, 'Didn't Adonai bring us up from Egypt?'" Remember that? Remember Gideon asking that question? Be prepared. Adonai heard his people's cry. We saw similarities between Gideon and Moses. They also went up against Midian, the home of the once exiled Moses. And there was even a dream for interpretation. All these things, some of them associated with the Exodus, some of them associated with the patriarchs. "And where are all his miracles our ancestors told us about when they said, 'Didn't Adonai bring us up from Egypt?'" To respond to Gideon, to respond to you, I would say, asked and answered. What Gideon experienced, he experienced Moses, he experienced Joseph, he experienced even, dare I say, well, he had several Moses moments. David, thank you. And then David moment as well thrown in. So Gideon's not perfect. We're not perfect either. We try God sometimes, but God also tells us to test him. He tells us to test the spirits, to know for certain. I envision Gideon, if he was a carpenter, he was a measure twice, cut once type of person. But when he acted, when he was convinced, he was decisive. Even when God gave him grace. Well, if you're not certain, take someone with you. Listen. He heard and he believed. It's the same principle today that we have also. We hear and we believe because the things that are in Scripture we cannot see. We were not there to witness firsthand. So we have to hear them in order to believe them, but it's not us by ourselves, but it's the Spirit that opens our minds, opens our hearts to truly believe. But if anything, Gideon was going through an intense faith aerobics class to get to the point where he needed to. So if everybody would please rise.